back together again, you and I, midweek Wednesday style, March 29th, 2023, on Connecticut Today. We chatted about the one aspect of the nation's gun problem that nobody really seems to want to really discuss in detail. Former Bridgeport Democratic State Rep. Chris Caruso phoned in this time to chat about proposed changes to the state's citizens' election program. Bridgeport City Council Majority Leader Jeanette Herron talked about attending the latest National League of Cities meeting in Washington, D.C. So as I predicted, not just me, a lot of other people who do this sort of thing, as I should say we predicted on talk radio, the vast majority of us around the state and around the nation who get to do this wonderful job that we do on a daily basis here. But as we predicted on radio, and some folks on television, and some folks in the print annals of media, the narrative since Monday's shocking mass school shooting in Nashville that killed three students and three staff members at a Christian elementary school, church and elementary school. We're only, 2 days into sitting back and reflecting on all this. And as many of us predicted, the real issue here, again, I will say this at the risk of being repetitive here, but it has to be kept in focus here, at least by some of us in the media, because the national media is not doing it. Now, whether that's a sin of omission, whether that is laziness, whether that's one of the, well, we're just not going to go here situations and scenarios, frankly, I don't know. But again, like I complain about here on the state level in Connecticut, that we seem to, circle the real issues here, or the real issues at hand here, but we never really zero in on doing anything about it. Again, we're doing it with this tragedy that happened in Tennessee. The person who committed this act, by the admission of the police department and her family, this is not anything that anybody is sitting around and postulating about and saying, well, kind of, sort of, what we don't know. No, we know. The woman who shot these six people, the three kids and three staff members, was, by the admission of at least her mother and the Nashville Metro Police, suffering from some sort of mental illness. We were told that yesterday numerous times. Kudos to the investigators in Memphis, I'm sorry, in Metro Nashville, for getting this out. Kudos to them. Now, in the ensuing 48 hours, and we all knew this was going to happen, the focus has been on the guns. Now, obviously, the gun was the tool that was used by somebody to kill six people. I'm not going to sit here on a regional radio station with a tremendous coverage and say to you, well, that wasn't the problem. No, that was the problem. The problem was that somebody committed this crime using a firearm. Now, you have to look deeper into that and say to yourself, person versus firearm versus person versus firearm. We get all that. But predictably, as every single time this happens, the political scoring point or point scoring, brigade begins. And the narrative I'm now seeing is, and granted, I tend to keep MSNBC on here in the studio because we're an NBC affiliate here at WICC. So things happen nationally. I usually take their audio. But all I'm seeing today is, well, and I'm seeing this on CNN, too, and to a point even on some, conservative outlets. Well, the fault here is America's gun culture. Is it? Is the fault here the gun culture of America, or is the fault here that somebody with obviously deep and serious mental health issues got their hands on something they should have never, at least in their present state of mind, been able to do? This is not rocket science. It's not. People who are of sound mind and body, but let's say sound mind, people who have their faculties, who are of sound mind, who can make logical and normal human condition decisions, don't kill people en masse. Is there ever a scenario where killing someone makes sense? Yes. Wartime, defending yourself in a dangerous situation, defending your family members in a dangerous situation, yes. But beyond that, if you indiscriminately shoot someone, I don't care whether you're a 20-something transgender individual who attended a school, or if you're a gangbanger on the city streets of Bridgeport or Hartford or New Haven or Waterbury or Danbury or New London or Meriden or New Britain or anywhere in the city or in the suburbs for that matter. You're not of sound mind. Well, he disrespected me, so I shot him. Well, you know, being disrespected is not, should not, if you are of sound mind, should not force you to kill someone. Maybe you get in a fight, maybe you pull a knife, I get it. The human condition takes over. But for some reason, when these large national and world-scale tragedies happen, it's always about the gun, and it's always how many guns they bought, and it's always about whether or not the guns were registered. And the worst thing, I'm sorry to say this, because again, let me tell you something. I've lost somebody, I've lost a family member through gun violence. So I know what it's like to get that phone call. I've talked about that here numerous times, lest you don't think that, you know, you can be out there saying, well, you don't know what it's like. No, pal, I know what it's like. But it turns out the guy that killed a family member of mine was, shockingly, a criminal. And if you remember that story from 1978, it was quite a protracted situation. And shockingly, he was a criminal. But I digress here. So today we see on a local and national scale, well, we've got to do this with guns and that with guns. Listen to me. The guns are not going away. They're not. I hate to tell you, the guns are not going away. Any notion that you're going to ban or get rid of so-called assault weapons, and by the way, the weapons this woman used to shoot up that school, it turns out they were not AR-15s. Now, they were long-barrel semi-automatics, but again, this is where my business screws things up because they don't take a breath. The guns are not going away. You know, I checked. We talked about this yesterday. So when I got in the studio here this morning and set up all my stuff and got my coffee and all my papers strewn about here, I tried to find the latest number on gun ownerships, the latest estimates. Again, these are all just estimates. But the number of guns here in the country, the minimum number I see is 300 million. The highest number I see is 430 million. Okay, so that's a difference of 130 million. So let's slice that in half, 65 million. So let's say, for the sake of argument, there are about 350 to 370 million guns in the country. Okay, if you eliminate 200 million of those, you still have 170 million guns in the country. The guns are not going away anytime soon. Now, 50 years, 100 years, 150 years, 200 years from now, well, if the guns go away, then maybe they do. But it will take multiple generations to do that. The second thing is, and this is all you're hearing about today, again, is assault weapons, AR-15s. Even if you pass that, there are still an estimated 15 to 25 million, not thousand, not hundreds of thousands, 15 to 20 to 25 million. Again, the low number I saw was 15. The high number I saw was 25 million. So let's take 20 million. There are 20 million what the media likes to call assault-style or military-style weapons in the U.S. Those are not going away. They're not. So if these things, if the number of overall weapons is not going to change by all that much, and remember, thousands of weapons are sold in this country every single day. As you and I speak right now at 2:17 and 49 seconds on this midweek Wednesday, March 29th, as you and I speak right now, there are countless thousands of background checks and gun purchases going on right now as we speak, likely here in Connecticut, but all across the country. So get that notion out of your heads, please. It is wasted brain power that we're going to pull away from a gun culture. It's part of who America is or what America is. And at least for the time being, unless there is a major sea change in Congress. Because remember, for every group of citizens in the blue-leaning areas of the country who wants to get rid or who desire to get rid of so-called assault weapons, there are also massive amounts of citizens in other red and centrist-leaning and red-leaning parts of the country who say, well, you know, listen, the person there in Tennessee was crazy, was a nut. I don't intend to go and shoot somebody up in a school. I use my my semi-automatic long gun for target practice and for hunting. Folks, the guns, please, can we just move beyond this? The guns are not going away, at least in any sort of short order. You're talking 2, 3, 4 generations before that would even remotely be possible. State Senate Democratic Leader Martin Looney of New Haven says we should raise the amount of the grant to run for governor of the state. Hell, I might do this. $18.7 million, that's what Marty wants. I say why not even go a little higher, maybe? I mean, I don't know. Does $18.7 million do it if you're running against somebody who is going to spend $25, $26 million? The Unclaimed Property Fund, as of this past February, was it $1.4 billion? Wow. 71 million of those assets were reclaimed during 2022. So 71 million was given back to people or given to heirs or whatever of people who deserved it. Chris Caruso is with us. Hey, Chris, thanks for hanging on. Good afternoon. What's up?
Hey, Paul. No, I just want to weigh in on this.
Sure.
The public financing system was my legislation, mm-hmm. and that fought to get it passed. Just a couple of things. The reason public financing was put in place was because of the corruption that was going on at the time.
Oh, yeah.
But also the influence of lobbyists and contractors mm-hmm. in public policy. And there was an outcry by the public, as there still is, well, you know, we don't want the lobbyists to control things. We want the legislators to be independent thinking and to go based on what the policies are in the best interests of the state. That's why it was put in. It has had a positive effect on exactly that, because there's been pieces of legislation where lobbyists have opposed vehemently, and yet legislators have had the independence to vote against the lobbyists. So it does work. It also levels the playing field. So if you have an average person who doesn't have a lot of money mm-hmm. but wants mm-hmm. to contribute to the process by running for office, can enter this fund. So understand, sometimes the public is a little fickle. One breath, we hate the lobbyists, we hate the contractors, we want independence. And so then when you give it to them, the usual critics who never run for office but who call this show and just criticize, you know, they just feel we shouldn't do anything. So there was a need. We addressed that need. It's having a positive effect. As a matter of fact, we're seeing more people coming in to the system who have never run for elected office before. We've had more incumbents lose because of this system, and that's exactly what it is. It's leveling the field so average people can be part of their democracy. So I want to make that clear. Secondly, the reason we tapped into the unclaimed property because there was a steady flow of income there.
Yeah.
We didn't want to tax people, so we went to unclaimed properties. Now, can you take some of that unclaimed property and dedicate it to something else? Absolutely you can, if the will of the legislature is there to do it. But that's what has to happen. So it doesn't mean that all the public financing takes up 1 point whatever billion you just mentioned. It doesn't all go to the public financing program. So understand that. The third thing is, why don't we just raise the governor's level to 50 million or 60 million or 70 million? It will never stop, Paul. And the truth of it is, you will never stop a billionaire, millionaire running for office. And if you never had public financing at all, you would have to go out and raise money to compete against the millionaire, which you will never do.
Which you'll never do, Chris. The concentration of wealth in this state is relatively small in a small geographic area. What do you think, Chris, of Marty Looney, who we've all known for years? Marty says make it. He gave a figure of just under 19 million. You know, Chris, I kind of agree with him. I mean, even if you keep it at the present level, how does anybody compete against somebody who's going to spend $25 million?
Paul, there's never going to be, every single election cycle, a millionaire running. You mentioned Bill. You mentioned Tong, for example. If he runs, he's not a millionaire.
Yeah.
You mentioned Susan Biswitch. She's not a millionaire. So occasionally you will get a millionaire who wants to run and use their money. But it doesn't mean you keep jacking up the system and the amount of money to try to compete, because you will never compete. So what happens in a year when a millionaire doesn't run?
Yeah.
You give someone $20 million to use on a campaign. Connecticut is not California. It is not Texas. It is not this sprawling land mass. You know, I think it's up to 9 million for a gubernatorial.
Yes.
That's more than enough.
So you wouldn't raise it then?
Money.
So you wouldn't raise it?
No, I wouldn't raise it. Okay. No, because it will start with the governor. Then before you know it, it's going to start with. They're even raising, for example, what's happened to the system since I was in.
Mm-hmm.
They've raising the amounts that people can give to campaigns. And that becomes a problem, because an average guy doesn't have a contact system and relationships where they can go out and reach a certain level that an incumbent can. So all I'm saying is that every time you keep changing this system, it's going to make it more unfair for average people to get in and to run and to have a place in their democracy. So, you know, that's my thing. It's about your messaging. Money doesn't equate with victory. We've seen across the country, people with money, Paul, don't win many times. They lose. It's your message. It's your campaign strategy. It's what you do on the ground that has more impact than tons of money that you pour into the system.
And I noticed, Chris, because I was following the totals as they were being released in the last campaign, the four quarterly totals, one thing I did notice, and I think I mentioned this before in news, is that it just looked like a lot of people either didn't care or they said, well, you know, all this money is there. Because when you look at it, Chris, I don't know whether you saw the numbers, the amount of money actually raised from campaign donations for either candidate was kind of small. It was remarkably small.
Yeah, and because you have a threshold. With any office, we set thresholds.
Yeah.
And we set, for example, the gubernatorial $250,000.
Yeah.
Because an average person can reach $250,000 if they're a legitimate candidate. I'm not talking about some fringe person who has no following, no background. I'm talking about someone who's a legitimate candidate who can get their message across, can conceivably raise $250,000. But if you keep increasing those thresholds, it's going to make it more impossible for an average person to run for office. And the whole point of public financing was to lay to even the field out, to get those average people in the race, because you want that exchange of ideas and opinions. And that way, the campaigns are more about policy and program rather than dialing for dollars, sitting on the phone and spending hours after hours trying to raise money from people. And the other issue is, if people don't like the millionaires running for office or the billionaires, there's the party system as far as the nomination process. You don't have to nominate a millionaire. You could say no to that. But you know, it's easy to say, well, because this guy's spending $50 million, I should spend $100 million. And where do you come up with 18.7? Where do you come up with 13 million? These are arbitrary numbers that a millionaire can surpass. You know, a guy like Lamont and Bob Stefanowski, they could surpass those amounts easily.
Yeah.
So you'll never catch up to them, Paul. You know, I think let the system run. It's been running since 2006. It's been running well. We've had very little problems with the system. We've seen actually incumbency shaken a little bit, where you're getting average people coming in and running and wanting to run. You're getting new people entering the system. You're seeing more women get into the system, more minority candidates running for office. So the system is doing exactly what it was intended to do. Let's be careful where we don't start screwing around with it so much that we turn it into this fund that doesn't work the way it was intended to. That's all I'm saying. So be mindful. $9 million for a candidate to run for governor is a heck of a lot of money in a state like Connecticut. There's no doubt in my mind. It's not a big state. You know, we have certain media markets, as you know, but they're not so overwhelming.
All right, Chris, thank you. Appreciate it. Right. Take care, my friend Chris Caruso there. On the proposal from State Senator Martin Looney to raise this thing to either 13 and change or $18.7 million, the Connecticut Citizens Election Program. We welcome back a past guest here to Connecticut Today, Bridgeport City Council Leader Jeanette Herron, joining us again. She's joined us a couple times, this time, though, to talk about what she heard and saw down in D.C., the nation's capital, the latest meeting of the National League of Cities Congressional City Conference. Hey, Jeanette, it's Paul again here at WICC. How are you?
Good afternoon, Paul. I'm fine. Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Well, it's great to have you on again. So tell me about D.C. Is this do you go to this every year, Jeanette? Does somebody from Bridgeport go every year, or has it generally been you over the past years?
No, we have a large delegation that goes to D.C. almost every year. This year we had 12 council members and two city staff members go there, because National League of Cities is not only for local elected officials, it's for their staff as well.
So what were some, I know, Jeanette, you've told me in the past and other people have that have gone on this, there are general themes, overriding themes, sometimes cut into or connected to what's going on in and about the nation and the area. What were some of the big ideas or big themes that you folks saw things about and chatted about?
Well, our current president, Victoria Woodard from Tacoma, Washington, her vision this year is partnerships, public-private partnerships with the cities to establish jobs, job training, and paid job training so somebody that does not have a job can work and get paid so they don't have to be homeless, pretty much. It's a good plan.
So would that be something you would hopefully see implemented here in the city of Bridgeport and the other cities around the state? Do we have anything, Jeanette, like that running right now? Anything like that?
We have some programs here, very minimal. I mean, we do have educational programs that they get trained by the unions, and it's a partnership between the unions and job workforce. We are going to try to look into more of doing that, having the high schools, you know, do their program and work with the police. But the key component is to have those people that come out to get paid. So it's something we're going to have to look at very closely, and maybe the ARPA money can help with that as well, looking toward the future.
Hey, Jeanette, do you go to these conferences and suddenly say, hey, wait a minute, we're not the only city going through X, Y, and Z? I would imagine it's somewhat comforting to hear that other cities have challenges just the way Bridgeport and Connecticut cities do, just when you think, hey, are we an outlier here? Are we not doing anything right? But there are common challenges, right?
Great question. There are so many common challenges throughout the nation with the cities, towns, and villages. We were talking about affordable housing. Everyone has a crisis with affordable housing nationwide. Even the small towns are having those issues. And walking around, going from class to class or meeting to meeting, we run into each other, we sit with each other, we have lunch, and all of a sudden the conversation comes up. It's public safety is another common factor throughout the cities and you know, the large cities, the small cities, not so much the small towns, because I spoke to a gentleman from Kentucky, and he said, I don't have that public safety issue like you do. You know, the decrease in the police department, the uptick in crime. So some don't, but the majority throughout the nation do have the same, you know, talking points. And it's good. It's a great feeling to see that we're not the only one. And some of the ideas that they have, we bring home. Some of the ideas we have, they bring home. And we try each other. We feed off of each other.
All right, a few more minutes here with part of the Bridgeport delegation that went down to the latest meeting of the National League of Cities in Washington, D.C. The Bridgeport City Council Majority Leader Jeanette Herron for a few more minutes. Jeanette, you touched on this right before the break. Boy, it does seem, especially for cities, Jeanette, like Bridgeport, but even Hartford, New Haven, Waterbury, Meriden, Middletown, the recruitment and retention of public safety officers, police officers here. I know the city is putting on a push here, but it's kind of tough, Jeanette. Is it not that every story we almost read all the time is, well, Bridgeport's got a few more officers, but we're still not where we should be? Did you hear a lot of how to combat that when you were in D.C.? You mentioned somebody who said he was lucky he didn't have that problem, but was that a major theme?
That population was only about 1,300. We are at 149 now.
Yeah.
It is a theme with the larger cities that they're having a very difficult time retaining officers. I think a lot of that is they're aging out.
Yeah.
There's money that needs to be put into hiring more. And we have to think of recruitment efforts maybe outside the box. And NLC has been talking about that. They've been talking. A key topic this year will be public safety and trying to revamp the look of a police officer or the stigma of a police officer. I think it's going to be hard for people to understand that we have to put social service components in it as well. A lot of municipalities are doing that. We are doing that as well. But there's more. We need money to hire more police. Bridgeport hires only 40. Or trains 40, and by the time that 40 is done, we might have 20, 25 come in. We can never get to the numbers that we had before if we're doing that.
And it must, Jeanette, be frustrating because, you know, when you talk, I'm sure the council meetings, you talk all the time, where's the officer number? And whomever is chief says, well, we have this many, but, you know, we just lost X amount of officers because they went to work, you know, in Trumbull or Fairfield or Wilton or Westport, where these towns can pay more. It's got to be tough.
It's very difficult. The competitive market out there, we train these officers and we train them very well at our academy. And all of a sudden, we're training 35, 40, and five will go just say to Shelton or to Trumbull. You're correct. It's frustrating. We've tried to put a year time frame on the training and saying, okay, you're here training this year. It takes you a year and a half to get out of training.
Mm-hmm.
We want you to stay in Bridgeport possibly 5 years. Once you're invested in 5 years, you stay. But because we don't have anything like that implemented, they can go wherever. And we have to look at some changes.
Jeanette, did you and the other attendees feel that as you were talking about the stuff in D.C. with leaders from bigger cities than Bridgeport, smaller cities, smaller towns all over the country, I'm guessing that when you're sitting there and talking about these issues, you don't really hear a party divide or a left versus right divide? I mean, to me, there are a lot of issues that you probably could agree with somebody from the deep south on, and somebody from the northeast could agree with somebody from the Rocky Mountains. I mean, there's stuff that just transcends partisan lines.
Well, I'm going to tell you, when we go to these NLC conventions, you don't know who is who in a party line. We don't discuss it. We don't talk about it. We intermingle with each other. Yes, people are from the South. I don't know if it's a red state. I don't know if it's a blue state. And we don't care. But we are so common in what our goal is to make sure that the constituents in all our communities are safe. They have proper housing. They have food. They have education. They have a workforce that's necessary. We all have that commonality, even from the smallest of the groups.
Jeanette, finally, just to veer back to Bridgeport here before we wrap up, what is currently, would you say, the top one or two issues on the plate right now or on the menu of the city council? What should people look for action on in the next coming weeks or months?
Well, I know hot topic right now is affordable housing, trying to find private partners to come in and build some affordable housing for us. That's a big push, I think, from all of the council. And the police department and making sure that we have the police department that we need.
Mm-hmm. Jeanette, thank you. Bridgeport City Council Majority Leader Jeanette Herron, who just got back along with the Bridgeport delegation from the National League of Cities Congressional City Conference in Washington, D.C. Jeanette, good to hear from you. Give us a call anytime and take care. We'll chat down the road.
Thank you for having me again. It's a pleasure to talk.
Appreciate it, Jeanette Herron there. All right, that's good. See, I like the fact that they go to these conferences, and I remember asking Jeanette and other people about this years ago about these conferences. You know, they don't talk partisan lines here. I mean, you got to feed somebody, like she said. You got to feed somebody. You got to educate kids. Fill the potholes. Take out the trash, right? Does the trash get picked up if it's a municipal pickup? What do people care about? I was joking with somebody here at the station the other day about somebody who's been elected over and over and over again. Why? They said, why do you think? I said, simple. You maintain low taxes, the cops come when they're called, the fire department comes when they're called, and the schools are decent. Most people, that's all they want. Most people. Others will say differently, but that's my simpleton way of looking at it.